Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mindshifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mindshifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice. Our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. And welcome, Michael.
Delighted. Glad to have you with us, folks. It's an awesome day here in Sarasota, Florida. And if you want to join us for some of the workshops that we'll be doing, we'll actually start next Sunday in Tampa, Florida, a place called Harmony, and next week we'll be in Ocala. Then we'll be over on the east coast of Florida in Boca Raton. We'll be doing a 9-day Why Is This Happening to Me Again intensive for those that want to get away from some winter, starting April the 6th, Easter weekend. Good Friday will start. It'll be an awesome time to open the space for some deep healing work. And so we're glad to have you with us. Of course, we have our Memorial Veterans Day invitation, and that is be part of the team that changed the world by supporting the elimination of war from planet Earth. How could you possibly do that? Well, we have a solution, an idea for you, and that is we invite you to look at today and every day some situation in your life where you have some form of hostility or fear that you're probably blaming somebody else for. And we're going to invite you to let go of the blame of someone else, which, of course, is the root cause of war. And we're going to invite you to be able to look at the internal conflict in your life. And instead of blaming someone else, take responsibility. Maybe you could hit the mute key there. Take responsibility and use the tool of forgiveness to change that part of the inside of you. Forgiveness being quite the opposite of what our culture teaches. It's a hard conversation to get away from, forgiving them or forgiving yourself. Forgiveness, actual forgiveness, has nothing to do with anybody else but you. It has nothing to do with letting them off the hook, and it has nothing to do with letting yourself off the hook for what's happening inside of you. You know, standard culture's language is, you did something really terrible that caused all this pain inside of me, but it's okay, I'll forgive you, I'll let you off the hook. Well, we are here to change that conversation and shift it into a conversation that puts an end to the game of externalizing internal conflicts and by taking responsibility, changing those internal conflicts. If you're not familiar with the forgiveness process, we invite you to go to our website, whyagain.com, whyagain.com, whyagain.com. And on the right-hand side, you'll see a link that says Download Worksheets. If you click on that link, the first 6 links will give you the whole forgiveness story. We got to add a new show to the forgiveness links. So now instead of 2, we have 3 awesome shows that were done where we've walked somebody through the whole worksheet process. If you have any questions about how forgiveness works, of course, we would love for you to call and ask us. But on a daily basis, you've got access to the archives under that link, Download Worksheets. Of course, there's a couple of hundred shows there. But the 3 in particular that are listed under the Download Worksheets link are 3 very powerful worksheets. And we sure appreciate Magda calling in yesterday with the willingness to go through a process and a, kind of a specialty worksheet, and that was one on herself. And we got to see, I think, very powerfully the effect of forgiveness on the human mind and being able to drill down into the parts of us that we normally don't look at. There's what I like to call the Hydra effect. For those who are familiar at all with Greek mythology, there was this creature called the Hydra, and when you cut off the Hydra's head, several more heads would grow out of the place where that one was cut off. There's a very profound truth there. And I think we ended up through the hour yesterday with that show, which is on the archives under, well, it's on the archives, but it's also under the download worksheet section. I think Manta ended up with 12 worksheets, each one specific to the original worksheet that she started with, which was a worksheet on herself. So it's kind of a little different approach when you're doing a worksheet on yourself than doing it on someone else. And if you want to hear exactly how that goes, we invite you to go to the archives or go to the website. And the first link under that section is chapter 24 of my book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? Explains the forgiveness process. And, of course, on the website, you're also welcome to download the book for free. And then the second link is the actual worksheet. The third, fourth, and fifth links are each radio shows where there's a different type of worksheet being done, a different topic and different points to be learned from each of those three. So if you just right-click on each of those three links and then click Save to Target, you can save that to your hard drive. They're MP3 format, so you can put them on your telephone, you can put them on your iPod or your MP3 player, listen to them on the computer, and you've got 3 hours of personal instructions on exactly how to do the worksheet process. They're awesome. Thank you again, Magda, for that. And we thank everybody who's willing to engage in this process of forgiveness. It's not an easy thing to do, especially at this time in history where it has hardly been conceived that it was possible to drill down into deeper parts of the mind, let alone has the technology been available for doing that. Interestingly enough, the technology for being able to do that is approximately 2,000 years old. It was disappeared about, 1965, 1970 years ago, something like that. The technology was just removed from the planet. And our work coming out of the ancient Aramaic manuscript called the Kabbalists is to support you in being able to shift and change those internal dynamics of denial, dissociation, and projection. To be able to bring it on home, bring it back inside, and by being able to do so, change what's happening on the inside. So, Jean, do we have any callers? Do we have anything happening in the chat room?
We do have someone with their hand up, and someone in the chat room asked, do we take calls? And yes, we do, 646-200-4169. Press 1 to talk to Michael, and our topic is on forgiveness. We'll be glad to take your questions and help you through that. Our caller is area code 517. You're on the air.
Hi, Michael and Jeannie.
Well, welcome, Rick. Glad you're in the show. Are you back in Michigan?
I'm back in Michigan, and I'm actually out riding, so I had to stop here because I thought my call, that's why I went in first, so I could ask my question, and then you can answer it, and I can put myself back on mute and continue my exercise. So,
all right.
It's a little cold here. We're having about 35, which is pretty balmy for February here. But my question, Michael, is I would like, if it's appropriate, to take some time today to go into a greater depth of power person process. You know, I've heard you explain it. I've shared it a number of times myself. I work with my clients with it and with my workshops, obviously. But I would love to hear you talk more about that. I have a client that I was working with today, and what I'm seeing more all the time is how the relations and the generations pass down you know, that process. And so having been and going through it personally, watching my grandfather and my dad, which was his father, and then transferring that to me, and then me taking that experience on personally, and then transferring that to my son unconsciously, my son, but especially my youngest, and then today having just a profound conversation. I've had a number of them with him, has been just profound and very helpful, and both of us are breaking this stuff up. And I would enjoy if you would spend some time discussing that.
Can't hear you, Michael.
Excuse me, I had my mute button on. Sure, we'd be glad to talk about that, Rex. And were you on the show yesterday?
I sure was. Wonderful, very powerful, and I listened to the entire process. Very helpful. I got interrupted because I had a client call during that phone consultation or during the session, so I missed portions of it. But for the most part, yes, I did. And I know you touched on it, and it was information that was shared. And my main reason I am asking it today is because my client should be listening. And I encouraged him to call in and listen, and I was hoping that you would explain it from your perspective so that he can hear it from a different angle maybe. And it might be just the same, but
cool.
Is that helpful?
Wonderful. Yep, I'll do my best. Well, first of all,
Go ahead. Well, I was going to put you back on mute, but I can wait. I'm not in any hurry. I just want to make sure I honor the program because I had my phone off mute initially, and I think I was the one you probably asked to have the mute turned on. I've learned that if I call your call quite often, I'm unmuted, and so I routinely put my phone on mute when I'm going to call in to listen to the program because quite often it's not.
Right. Cool. Well, a couple of things. One, we did about 16 days on the codependence topic back, I'm not even sure, last April or so.
Okay.
And if you go to the archives, you'll see there's about 16 hours where we talked about the whole codependence process. So anybody who wants to go into depth, there's a place to do it. Also, of course, you can go to our website and order the video. Codependence to interdependence. And that video very precisely covers the codependence work. And, of course, we starting on, July the 13th, our first intensive this summer for somebody who really wants to go to depth in dealing with codependence issues, we'll be doing a 9-day codependence to interdependence. And in that workshop, we'll do, of course, the workshop codependence to interdependence. We'll do why is this happening to me again. We'll do feelings through relationships. We'll do mind shifters and still point breathing. So it's a powerful place to open a deeper space and refine and contribute to the understanding of the codependence process, because everybody
awesome.
Who's lived there has a contribution to make to the understanding of that process.
No doubt. And I had one other thing. I apologize for interrupting one more time, Michael. And then I'm going to mute. We ordered Getting the Stress You Need. I realized I did not have it in my archives because we're doing it from the support group.
Rex, if you could slow down just a little bit. You're slightly distorted, and I'm losing your voice. I'm not really understanding what you're saying.
Okay, I'll slow down. Thank you. We ordered Getting the Stress You Need CD, but we haven't received it yet, and it's been almost a month, I think. So I just wanted to mention that for Jeannie's awareness.
You know, I'm going to have to ask you to say it again. Again, it's a little difficult to understand. Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's kind of, it's humorous. It's getting the stress you need.
There you go.
Okay.
Well, we'll check on that. Yeah.
All right.
And see what happened with it. I'll make sure we follow up with that.
Sure. Thank you so much. All right, I'll mute now.
Okay, cool.
Thanks.
So codependence, basically, the definition we use for codependence in this work is that anytime I have my mind outputting something good, bad, or ugly, and I want to blame somebody else for it, I'm in codependence. So if I'm in sadness and I say, you really made me sad, I'm being codependent. I'm saying that you're causing something to happen inside of me, which of course is ridiculous. You can't possibly cause anything to happen inside of me. The only thing that can cause something to happen inside of me is what's inside of me. Now, I can hide it from myself, and you can be the trigger for it, but the cause will still be what I'm holding hidden inside myself. The way that I hide something from myself is to go into what I call projection language or codependent language. And codependent language is, you made me. So the minute I say to somebody, you made me, I just abdicated responsibility for my own life, for the content of my own mind, for the content of my own emotions, my physiology, my diseases, and everything else. I can also enter into codependence with a conversation that says, you made me happy. Like you could possibly cause something to happen inside of me, which of course, as I say, and I'll say it again, is ridiculous. If I have happiness inside of me, now you could be the trigger for my happiness, and if I don't know any better, I'll say that you caused that to happen in me. I can only experience what's happening inside of me because it's there, not because you did it to me. So there's the first step. And so the solution that we offer there is to move into responsibility. So to start with responsibility language, and hand in hand with codependence work goes responsibility communication. And so the conversation shifts to, when this happened and you were involved, I felt this way. So the shift into giving your mind permission to show you that what you're experiencing belongs to you instead of to somebody else is part and parcel of responsibility. So my mind contains data out of which I build the world I see. You know, most people have been trained where they think that when they look through their eyes, they're looking at something outside themselves. And if you could see what was actually outside of you, it would look nothing like anything you've ever seen before. It would resemble nothing your eyes have ever shown you. If we listen to the truth of how the world works, we could listen to Einstein, who says, on such things as matter, we have been all wrong. What we have heretofore called matter is energy. Energy whose vibrations have been so lowered as to be perceptible to the senses, there is no matter. So if you're looking through what you call your body's eyes and you think you see matter out there, you're stuck in an illusion. You're stuck in something that isn't true, because we know, I mean, the world has been in a state of mass, I mean literal, mass hypnosis for thousands of years, proclaiming that what they see in their minds is outside of them. If you see something material through your body's eyes, you are not looking at something outside of you. You're looking at an hallucination produced by your mind. And it's kind of easy to prove that that's true. All you have to do is go to a courtroom where six different people testify about an accident. And you will wonder, in some cases, if any two of them were at the same accident. Why? Because each one is living in their own hallucination. So everyone lives in a reality of their own making based upon the content of what's held in their minds. One person sees an event and says, what a wonderful event, that was awesome, thank you for doing that for me. Another person has exactly the same event occur and says, what a terrible thing you've done to me, how horrible you are. Obviously, they're not both experiencing the same reality. So you got to get with the truth of what's going on. We could add to that understanding the quote from Max Planck, who's a physicist, and as he's receiving the Nobel Prize in Physics, here's what Max says. As a man who spent his entire life studying matter, I can tell you this much. There is no matter as such. Our entire world is made of succeedingly smaller patterns of vibratory fields nested one within another, within another. So if you could see what was going on out there, you'd see this pattern of vibratory fields. You'd see this energy lowered to become perceptible to the senses. So the first order of business to get out of codependence is to recognize that your brain isn't showing you anything outside of you. But what is happening is when one of these vibratory fields comes around, maybe we call it a person, then that person with the energy they carry resonates something in us that's painful, something we haven't wanted to look at or deal with. And what we'll do is we will build our brain's image of them out of that painful material in us. So literally we'll take data that is corrupt from within ourselves, our own sadness or grief or rage or fear or hatred or vengeance, whatever, and we'll build what looks like a body in our minds. The only place where bodies exist is as an image in the mind, out of that corrupt data that this person resonates in me, and they'll show up in our mind with our problem attached, and we'll swear it must be their problem. And we're now in codependence. The problem with going into codependence is that you have to dissociate from something. You have to disown something that is yours in order to pretend codependence. So when you dissociate from something that's yours in order to pretend codependence, that which is yours now becomes untouchable by you. It becomes unchangeable by you. Because, of course, you believe that it's outside of you, and you have to keep it hidden in your mind. Listen to yesterday's show. It's, from one point of view, it's one of the coolest worksheets we've done on the radio show, because Magda, in her bravery, is ready to do a worksheet on what she knows is some of her stuff, something that's going on for her. And she thinks it's about something that she is holding against and criticizing herself for, something she's done to herself. So she's going to do a worksheet on herself. And if you listen to that show, you'll see how she drills down into the content of her own mind. And, you know, she, as we're doing the worksheet yesterday on the show, she made the comment, "Yeah, Michael, that just fits so well. I really feel like I'm drilling down." And she went from being an upset toward herself to a point of actually quite a bit of excitement as she drilled down into and could see the underlying parts of her mind with which she created this codependent relationship with herself. Wherever there's blame, there's codependence. It doesn't matter whether you're blaming someone else or yourself. There's codependence. And so what Magda was able to do was to see where there were 12 different worksheets that she could potentially do, and we call that the Hydra effect. You cut off the Hydra's head and up pop another, you know, half a dozen heads. Well, as you, and this was a pretty actually genius piece in Greek mythology to present us with, because when you dissociate from something in your own mind, you hide it from yourself, and it underlies then something that your mind could do at some point in the future. Are you getting all that data, Jimmy?
I don't know what the reaction is on it. It just started.
Are you getting all that data, Jimmy? Hello?
Yeah, I'm still here. Yeah, it was crazy, and I don't. You're the only one turned on right now, so I don't know. Oh, it must be on the station.
Okay, well, it's disappeared, so we're okay. Let's just carry on. Thank you. So anyway, what Magda was able to see was all of these issues that were underlying and had contributed to her wanting to blame herself for something, or in her language, take responsibility. And so once you start to move away from the codependent issue, once you start to move to actual interdependent relationships, then you see the parts of your mind that you have dissociated from, and you're able to remove those. Now, an easy way to tell whether or not you're living in a codependent space, it's really simple, and that is that if you look over the your lifetime, what you will see is that you have been limited to three behaviors. And those three behaviors all relate to our power person dynamics. And the power person, by definition, this is something we introduced in our codependence to interdependence video. Power person is someone who, at some point in your life, had more power over you than you did and was not functioning out of love. So that's the definition of a power person. More power than you had, and was not functioning out of their human lives. And, of course, our definition for a human life is hold a newborn child. You know exactly what human life is. If you had someone who had more power over your life at some point than you did, and they were in control of your life, then you have a power person. And the only three behaviors possible for someone who's living in that codependent dynamic are all related to the stress levels that one is under. And we will be controlled by the dynamics of our power person until we're able to forgive those dynamics from inside of us, until we can drill down in them. And that was the discovery that Magda made yesterday, was how much this idea of self-blame and hostility towards self, which was what her worksheet was started out as being, was a family dynamic. It's a family model been going on. She could track back three generations that she knew that did this. So if you just take a look at your life, if you're functioning out of codependence, then you're functioning out of a carbon-based memory bank, and the memory bank that you're functioning out of has content that's been developing over the generations. You might remember that story of the Jews wandering in the desert for 40 years, and a journey that should have taken about 2 weeks now takes 40 years. Why? And if you look back and you read that story, what you find is the way that release from the desert came was when the old generation died off. Now, they weren't talking about people in old physical bodies. The root of the word generation is genari. What they were saying was, when the old cause is held in mind. But you can't change a cause that you're dissociated from. You can't change a cause until you drill down into it and are willing and able to bring it forward to conscious awareness and come into direct relationship with it. When I'm in codependence, somebody comes along and does or says something that resonates brain cells that I've dissociated from, and I create a picture of them out of those dynamics. I have two types of relationships with that pain. One, I feel it. Two, I blame somebody else for it. And so now I'm in indirect relationship with the cause of my pain. When I'm in indirect relationship with the cause of my pain, I can't change it. So the three dynamics relate to stress levels, and when there's no stress, you know, just look back to your relationship with your power person, and for most people there are several of them, but there's one primary, and we'll explain in a minute how to tell who the primary power person is. But when there's no stress, you'll find that you will do whatever you did in order to get along with your power person. When stress starts to build, if you're living out of carbon-based memory, out of a codependent state, then you'll automatically, your mind will counsel you to go into doing what you did to resist and survive with your power person. And then when you become ultra-stressed, you'll do what your power person did that you hated the most. You will be fully, completely, 100% defined by your power person dynamics. And it always amazes people when I'm you know, processing with them, working around an issue, and they know. In fact, on Sunday we had a guy say, "Well, you know, is there a cheat sheet for how to figure that stuff out, Michael, that you just, you know, pointed me to?" It's like, well, it's pretty easy. All you have to do is watch your words and your behaviors. So when I hear what somebody did when they're under stress, I know precisely what their power person did to them. You know, last night, the support group, we had a brave young lady who did a worksheet, and she shared with us that when she's under heavy stress, she wants to yell and scream and hit. And I said, well, how did it feel when your power person yelled and screamed and hit you? She's like, well, yeah, my power person yelled and screamed to me a lot, but I never got hit. I said, well, how about just taking a breath? If under stress you hit, what I know is that your power person hit you. That's just the way it is. And she breathed a couple of times and said, I don't remember what all happened, but a couple other comments were made. And all of a sudden, she's drilling down. This whole memory comes up. It's like, oh, God, I remember my mother beating me with a rubber hose. Yeah, that's what defines us if we don't ever clean up the power person dynamics. And the way that you tell who your key power person is when the stress is up and the chips are down, what does your body's mind counsel you to do in the way of behavior? Whatever behavior comes forward at that point will be a behavior done by your key power person. And, of course, to resolve the power person dynamic, there's actually a whole worksheet on the website, and, of course, it goes hand-in-hand with the video. The worksheet, Codependence to Interdependence, and the video, Codependence to Interdependence, can be ordered from the website. And it gives another tool for how to crack open this dissociated state and to move out of the dissociated mind and back into direct relationship with what has been dissociated from. Now, it's not always easy to do. It's not always fun to do. You know, to go back and drill down into the memory of being beaten by someone that supposedly said things like, you know, I'm only doing this because I love you. And of course, you know, the power person who would beat a child with a rubber hose, guess what their power person did to them? Beat on them. And this gets passed from generation to generation to generation. That's called living in the desert. That's why the brilliance of the Aramaic is said to get out of the desert, to get out of that state of unconsciousness, the old generation has to die off. Now, you probably don't believe that you do what your power person did to you that you hated the most. I'm here to tell you, you do that, precisely that. However, here's the game the mind plays. When I'm doing that, I will hold a totally different reality about it than the truth. If you look in the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again, you'll see the chapter, and I forget what the chapter name is, but in the chapter where Richard is in a restaurant and he's spilled some coffee on his plate, on his saucer, pardon me, and the waitress comes over and, you know, in his mind, his reality is that she grabs his coffee from him. And the way his mind perceives it is he's having something taken from him. And so he lashes out at her. Now, in her mind, in his mind, his blockage of truth does not show him that he's lashing out at her. He just justifiably protected himself. So his mind's lie is not the truth. I lashed out at her. His mind's lie is, well, you know, people take things from me and I have to protect myself. So I was just protecting myself. By holding that lie as the truth, we get to live in blockage of truth. And there isn't room for truth to get into our minds. So when I forgive, what happens is that collapses that whole projection game. It collapses the power person dynamic, and all of a sudden, I get to see the truth. Most people live in total denial that they had a power person, and certainly in denial that they would ever do. But if you want to, and just, you know, here's a good exercise, too. This is one that we're doing our codependence intensive. Just write down all the behaviors that your power person did to you that you really detested and disliked. And then take that list to the people around you that know you well, that know you when the stress is up and the chips are down and there are things going on. And just ask them if you ever do that. And you know what they're going to tell you? Now, you'll swear you never do it, but you know what they're going to tell you? Yeah, that's exactly what you do. But you don't see it that way because of your denial. Your mind hallucinates a different reality, and it looks different to you. So that's the kind of the core of the whole body of the codependence work. Rex, I hope that answers your question and gets where we want to go. And if the client that you were speaking about is on the show, we would love to hear your voice if that relates to you, if you relate to what we're saying and you'd like some refinements. Our call-in number is 646-200-4169. That's 646-200-4169. We would love to hear from you, and if there are any refinements we can give you on the process or any aspects of it, it's a 2.5-hour workshop, or a 9-day workshop, and so we're not going to cover it all in a few minutes in the show, but that's kind of the highlights of codependence. So, Gee, do we have anything, any comments happening in the chat room and or any callers?
We do have a hand up, and it's area code 810. You're on the air. 810.
Michael?
Hello, 8. Give us a name, and where are you calling from?
My name is Adam. I'm calling from Attica, Michigan, and I'm the client that Rex was referring to.
Awesome. Welcome.
Adam, hear your voice again.
Yes, thank you very much. That rings true. What you're talking about, it's funny as you're describing it, you know, I was pretty unconscious. I noticed yesterday that, you know, one of the things I didn't like that my dad did was, he would try to control everything. And yesterday when I was under great stress, I noticed I was like, you know, checking out everything that my partner did. And I was like feeling very suspicious and hallucinating that she did something. I mean, I even hallucinated that she threw something away sneakily and then looked in the trash later and she hadn't.
Yeah. That's exactly what happens. And of course, when that happens, the stress that the partner is experiencing will tend to go up and they'll tend to move into their power person dynamic. Now you've really got crazy time happening. As that occurs, one of the things that we show in the codependence video is that at that stage in the relationship, there are actually 6 non-beings involved in the relationship. 6 actual non-beings, 3 in each mind, playing out within the relationship. And man, that's when relationships get really crazy, and that's when the greatest potential is there for healing. It's an awesome opportunity if we can just step back as you're doing and get conscious and go, oh, what's the truth of what I'm doing here? And, you know, in that place of paranoia and suspicion, of course, you were just looking for what was lost. That which is what your mind would tell you. In your partner's mind, as she watched, she'd be saying things like, boy, he really distrusts me. And you know, until you can let that truth in, that it's an action of distrust, then there's going to be not much room for communication about that issue until each person is able to step back and see their own internal dynamics. And the way you drill down into those dynamics, you know, in the show yesterday when we were doing that worksheet with Magda had a codependent relationship with herself and was playing out her power person dynamics with herself. You know, it's just so awesome when you have the brain cells for that and understand it. So are there any questions you have, Adam, about what we've said or how it applies specifically to your situation or how we can support you in cleaning it up?
Thank you for what you just said. That was, I want to explore that more because I did notice that she got more triggered when I did that for sure, and things did tumble downward. So it's reassuring that you're saying when there's six unconscious beings in the room that that can be a time of growth, great growth if it's used that way. I would like to take advantage of that opportunity, and yet I still see this blockage in my own mind to like fully accepting responsibility for that, and rather than be upset with what behaviors that she's expressing around.
Right. And there's kind of a trick in the worksheets, and you might want to download it from the website under download worksheets on Why Again. But basically what we do in that workshop is we do an exercise where we have people list everybody that has ever offended them, acknowledging, of course, in some cases there's not enough paper in the world, a list of what their offenses were, what the punishment thought is, and what your advice was to them. And so this would be really useful in your relationship to make a list. And just take yesterday's scenario and imagine that your partner is a cherished equal, which probably wasn't exactly the way you were seeing her in that state of mind. And if you were to give her, as a cherished equal, advice, what would that advice be?
Oh, if I were giving her advice from the perspective of a third person, viewing.
Yeah. If you were to, take the scenario and everything that you're seeing that she did to upset or offend you, which of course is codependence and projection. But in that scenario, what would your advice? Just share with us one piece of advice you'd have for her.
Oh wow.
Big breath.
Yeah. Be nice. I don't want to say.
Be nice. Okay. So, what would your definition of be nice be? What would that look like?
It would look like looking at the other person and essentially being in relationship, like being warm and considerate, essentially, and working together with the children and doing household tasks.
Okay, so now what we then do, the last column in the worksheet, and so are you up for an assignment?
Absolutely.
All right, so I'm going to invite you to write a letter to your wife.
Okay.
All the things that you just said that you'd want her to do in that situation is a reflection of the smoke and mirrors of your own dissociated mind. And here's what we found is that when you start to follow your own advice, all of a sudden you notice that you are a genius at giving advice. So your assignment will be to write her a letter telling her how all the advice you just shared, you give to her, warm, cooperative, taking care of the family, how you're going to follow that advice in your relationship with her. Are you breathing?
No, I wasn't. I was thinking about how, it's actually brought up the other thing I wanted to ask you, which is, I've been doing 6 worksheets a day for the past probably 60 days, and before that I was doing 2 a day for like 40 days, and I was thinking when I'm about writing this letter, and while writing this letter I was thinking, I'd go through the actions, and yet, similarly when I do the worksheets, I'm going through the actions, but I'm like not always having this sincere, heartfelt part of me that's coming to the table to really want to manifest it,
Right, I hear you. And so just by starting to be able to have the brain cells of here's what I need to be doing, you see, what happens when we go into denial and dissociation, it usually happens by the age of 4 for most people. They're fully dissociated by the age of 4. And so what happens is all their lives, they will pull people in who will trigger their dissociated minds. When they trigger the dissociated mind, then out of my dissociated mind, I will hallucinate a body. I call them, and I will populate that body with all the faults I have, all the things that I've dissociated from in me. And then I'll advise them as to how to correct those things. And I think I'm giving advice to them. But I'm really hallucinating a body out of my own dissociated mind so that I get close enough to what it is I need to see and do that I actually start following my own advice. So I'm trying to get the advice close enough that I can hear it and go, oh, gee, maybe I should apply that to me. And so as you write in detail how you're going to apply all of your advice in that scenario from yesterday in your life in relationship to her, you're going to crack a lot of this dissociated stuff down.
Yeah, that sounds great. I've been doing the worksheet when I do the end part where, you know, I asked to be shown how I violated number 3, that, you know, what I would like from her or, you know, whoever I'm doing the worksheet on. I've been seeing, wow, that's really interesting. I'm really not doing some of these things that I really want from these other people. So this is really great. Thanks for helping, you know, give me that extra push to realize that I can have the courage to start giving those things. Let's see what happens.
Delighted to share it with you. And I don't know if you have a copy of the commitment from the website.
I do, yes.
Okay. So then the other piece of the puzzle would be that instead of in states where the stress is up and the chips are down, instead of following the behaviors that you feel like doing, you feel like following, because that's what leads you right down the path of the power person. So instead of following the behaviors of that your mind would feed to you based on feelings, which are nothing but reflections of unconscious thoughts, with the commitment and a renewed commitment to that, you choose to live according to a set of principles. So even when your mind feels like going in the other direction, like for instance in the first idea in the commitment is, I promise to trust you enough to tell you the truth and treat you lovingly, gently, and with respect. Now, when the stress is up and the chips are down, and I'm back there facing my power person, I don't want anything to do with love, gentleness, and respect. I want to do whatever my power person did to me that I hated the most. So if they raged at me or if they got paranoid and didn't trust me, then I'm going to go into paranoia and distrust. That's what my feelings are going to drive me toward. When I make a commitment to live the commitment, and this really takes having personal power. And one of the workshops we do is purpose, personal power, and commitment. And so when I'm in a state of personal power, I'm able to follow my highest guidance continuously, no matter what happens in my world. So if I say to myself, okay, here I am in this relationship with this person that I cherish. My power person, who was supposed to be cherishing of me, after all, I was their little kid that they loved. And when their stress was up, they would puke on me in their own particular way. So here I am 30 years later wanting to puke on this person that I say I cherish in the same way my power person puked on me. So I'm going to stop, and when my mind counsels me to do that, I'm actually going to lay hold of my personal power. Oh, that's right. The principle I've chosen to live with you by is to treat you lovingly, gently, and with respect. Now, there's a part of my mind right now that wants to, you know, blame you, distrust you, and think you're out to hurt me. But what I'm committed to, and I choose to lay hold of my personal power, what I'm committed to is, instead of speaking those vile words that are patterned after what my power person spoke to me, you know, sweetheart, there's a part of me that's really in upset right now and wants to do some crazy stuff. And what I know is that I cherish you with all my heart. And I appreciate you being the mother of my children and how we're working toward creating a really conscious family life that eliminates all the power person dynamics that came from my childhood and all the power person dynamics that came from your childhood, and that we, instead of functioning as power persons with our children, function as conscious human beings living out of our active presence of love and supporting them being able to live out of the active presence of love, our real, true human lives. You're going to change your whole family, and you change that family, and you'll change the world. Are you breathing?
Yeah, I'm returning to it. You know, I'm going to do this. You know, what's coming to mind is all these obstacles that have been there, or, you know, the thought of, like, she's been behaving quite meanly for quite a while, and she came from a pretty intensely dysfunctional background, and, you know, as you were talking, I realized, like, none of that needs to be a reason why I can't step up and do these things that, and be the active presence of love, and then whatever happens, however she responds, you know, I can trust that I'll know the next step, that if I keep practicing this, keep working on myself, because, I substitute teach, and, there's some kids who really push boundaries quite a bit, and previously, before doing these worksheets, I'd get so, like, angry and upset inside, and this time, like, I at least realized that I was doing it, and that I needed to address that first before I addressed any discipline in the classroom, and I also realized that, you know, part of the reason I got so upset is because, you know, I wasn't clear inside of myself on what I wanted or expected from the kids, right? And I think similarly in this relationship, I need to get really clear on what I want from it and really, you know, commit to being this active presence of love, because for a really long time I've used the excuse that, like, the relationship began by her intentionally getting pregnant so that she would have a long-term relationship with me. And so I've struggled for a long time with accepting that I'm in this relationship because I didn't feel like I consciously chose it. And so, I'm ready.
It does definitely take participation in order for somebody to get pregnant.
Yes, yes.
It's not something she can intentionally do on her own.
No.
There's a certain level of participation that has to happen there. But, you know, one of the things, as you mentioned, being a teacher, and if we could get a generation of teachers that would be the ultimate disciplinarians, we would live in an awesome world. And the word discipline comes from the word disciple. It means properly taught, not properly beat up. If as a child you were properly beat up, then you probably think, the way the world thinks, that discipline means properly beat up, properly disciplined. The word disciple means to be properly taught, so to disciple someone. So if we could get teachers who had been discipled in human life, that is, properly taught how to function as humans, there would be no dysfunctional child in the classroom. There would be no dysfunctional child in the home. And if the dysfunctional child came into the classroom, you know, I don't know if Julie Haverstick might be on the show today. If she is, maybe she'd call in. Julie wrote a book called Healing Children, Loving Children, and she used it in the classroom. Julie did this work in an inner city school in Dayton, Ohio, and a pretty tough school, tough neighborhoods. And I would have days when Julie would call me maybe at 4 o'clock in the afternoon and say, you know, yesterday at school was just crazy for me, so I took a well day off of school And I'm on my 35th worksheet this afternoon, working around that to clean up in herself what came up in her from being in the classroom, which always related back to what when she was a kid in a rough school system, in a family system that had some traumas, that she would clean those things up inside of herself and then go back and discipline the children. One particular story, and is Jeannie on the line, or is Julie on the line by chance?
She is.
Jill?
Hold on just a second. No,
she is?
Turned on. Yes, she is. She's been listening the whole time.
Oh, awesome.
Julie, you are on.
I am here.
Hey, welcome to the show. It's a delight to hear your voice. And the direction I'm heading with this, you probably already know, but there's a particular story in your book about a young boy that came into the classroom the last, I think it was 6 or 8 weeks of the school year. Maybe you'd share that story and what happened with this kid who, when he first came into the classroom after having been thrown out of I don't even know how many other schools, wasn't allowed to ride the school bus, literally came in the room, and I think he was 2 years, if I remember correctly, 2 years older than anybody else in your grade one class, so he's 7 or 8, and he comes in the classroom, and he gets down on his hands and knees, and he starts biting the ankles, and I don't mean playfully, but biting the ankles of other children. Would you share what happened as you disciplined him, Julie?
Yeah, as I started to discipline, he ran away from me and then went under my desk, and I could not get him out at all. He was actually starting to bite me or, you know, kick or whatever, and I thought, oh, my goodness, what do I have here? And so I remember getting the principal, and we actually established a chair for him in the office. He was actually pretty non-functional as far as a child, where my children were and everything. So I talked to the parents, and we started doing worksheets that night or the next night with him, and I used the children's worksheet, and the first time I gave him a huge box of crayons, 64 crayons, so he could choose any crayons, and he just picked a black crayon and drew a stick figure of himself, which was a very primary figure. And, we went from there, and I guess, like I said, every night we were doing worksheets so that we would get an opportunity to see if we can't change the energy. And his parents were very grateful. He also learned the children's commitment, and actually he became one of my little student teachers to help the other children, you know, press out their issues. We only had about maybe nine weeks, and he really grabbed hold of that worksheet and really started changing his behavior. He became, you know, one of, he started actually doing better with his behavior. In the beginning, I couldn't even trust him to walk down the hall to use the bathroom because he just tore up the bathroom when he first went down there by himself. He would, you know, stick his leg out, trip children, and things like that. But by the end of the time period, before summertime, he was really handling himself quite well. It was really pretty amazing. And in my book, you can see a picture of, a before picture of him and then an after picture of him. So, the whole process really worked. The parents were excited. When he went on to second grade, he actually was having difficulty again and came back to knock on my door for some worksheets. But, the school didn't want to go that route, and the teacher actually punished him for coming to my room, for being responsible, for knowing that he was off target and then attempting to, get some worksheets from me. She was really upset, and so the school processed him out for being a severe behavior disordered child, and they were working towards getting him out of the school, and the parents moved. So I could really see that using the tools did sincerely change a child, and he definitely was a high maintenance type of child to really stay on, let him know that you mean what you say and you say what you mean, but also doing your own work. I had to do my own work so that I could really stay conscious with him. And I really did see that even though I only had a short time period, it did make a difference in his life.
We're down now to just a few seconds left, so we're going to have to put a hold. But perhaps
okay.
Tomorrow we could continue this conversation because it's an awesome one and open still another level of the space. And with the tools, what we know is everybody can create the best year yet of your eternal life, and we join each of you in doing that. Please call me the show tomorrow if that works for you, and we'll continue the conversation. Blessings.